Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David
and Donald. This week, we are talking about time. How much time do you have, David?
I have a lot of time. Actually, no, you know what? I'm lying. I don't have as much time as I thought I did. But I have just enough time. We'll say that.
Well, how would you define time? And are we talking more in just a clock sense or more of a spiritual, esoteric, philosophical sense?
Well, you know, the clock sense kind of speaks for itself. We're all kind of chained to this thing called time. We're physical beings, and we were born, we live, we die, birth, school, work, death, as the Godfather song goes. But where it really gets crazy to me is perception, because anything beyond just a regular birth, school, work, death thing, then it starts to get into perception. And when it gets into perception, that's when you see what I think is the malleability of time.
Oh, so you think time can be stretched and condensed and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
In what way?
Yeah, by perception. Perception is one of the biggest things I think contributes to how it's stretched. Like, for example, some people go through a traumatic event, and they say that it all happened in slow motion. And so that's one way that time kind of gets stretched out. Or, you know, you have a busy day and time's flying. Or if you have a slow day at work, you look at the clock and you swear that it moved back 2 minutes. So the speed at which time is going, I think, is really relative. Your experience of time is just relative to the experience you're having at that moment.
So if time is malleable and our perception is connected to, you know, our idea of the world and how we see everything, and that's connected to, you know, our physical body, does that mean that there are times when our body can be aging faster or slower than other times? Is that what you're saying?
I didn't think of it in those terms, but, you know, let's talk about that. That's a really interesting thought. I mean, do you believe that? Do you have that belief?
Actually, I had not thought of that until you were talking just a few moments ago. And I was like, well, wait a second. If we're able to perceive time differently, then is time actually slowing down or speeding up? Is our body and our cells speeding up and slowing down? Like you said, with like a car crash or some other traumatic event, if we're perceiving things going slower, does that mean we're at some point speeding up or slowing time down just a little bit? And if we have like decades where we have little moments where we speed it up or slow it down, then it just seems like it would affect our body in some way. And since our cells are energy, and it, you know, when you break it all down, everything's energy, but our cells, our biology reacts to our perception and our ideas and our thoughts, then if we perceive time slower or faster, then it seems like it, our cells and our body and our biology and everything would adapt itself to whatever reality we believe that we're living.
Possibly. I mean, that makes sense. I think it makes sense completely from just a purely biological standpoint. Let's take the example of the mile a minute, you know, when you're living fast, as the example were. Live fast, die young, is the old saying. You know, are you burning up your cells quicker? Are you literally living fast and dying young because you're accelerating your lifespan, because your perception of time is accelerated? Well, from a purely biological standpoint, if you live a very busy life, sure, I think that basically you're going to work your body a little harder, you know, through the stress, through the activity, through, you know, just the burning up of it. There are schools of thought that take the idea of time and just say, you know what, there's really not a discussion to be had, because every 365.25 days, the Earth ends up in the same relative place around the sun. You know, it's like gears in a clock. Why are we worried about the perception of it? If the lifespan is between 80 and 100 years, what does it matter if time slows down or speeds up in any given moment of perception, is what the argument would be for this particular part of the conversation.
I guess that goes on a completely different thing from what we're talking about. If having a conversation about time is, I guess, using a simplistic term, silly, then why do people spend so much, quote unquote, time on time?
You mean living by the clock? Is that what you mean by spending so much time on time?
No. I'm referring to science studies everything. And one of the things that science studies is time. And one of the things that science has gotten into, especially in psychology, is the study of how we perceive time, how we experience time. And if we are experiencing time, as you said, on a more accelerated route, like, you know, living fast and, you know, dying young and all that kind of stuff, then I would have to say that that's not just a result of time. That's just a result of working, like you said, working ourselves faster and harder than most people would. So therefore, they burn out quicker. But if you're living that quickly, you know, and have accelerated perception of time, then you're probably getting tons of input. And depending on how your body is able to deal with that stress or whatever, then you could live off, you know, that energy a lot longer than somebody who doesn't. It's like a little chihuahua can go yap, 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 yap forever. But at the same time, you know, you have an older dog that doesn't live for hardly at all, and it lives much shorter lifespan. And so I think I'm having a problem with separating the idea of biology, perception, and putting it in a more of a you know, kind of a new age spiritual context while still holding on to, you know, scientific concept of it.
Okay. You're having trouble separating the biology from the philosophy of it?
That would be a good way to say it quickly.
So where do you have trouble? Where does the trouble come for you as far as the separation goes?
Okay. Well, if the biology is affected by time, as it is, you know, nothing lives forever, as they say, everything changes, then our bodies are affected by time.
Okay.
And that is our biology being affected by, you know, the spin of the clock. If we go into a New Age philosophy or, you know, a spiritual philosophy or whatever kind of philosophy or whatever name you want to call it, then, you know, there's a belief that time is endless. And that it's also, I think we talked about this in an earlier podcast, where it's possible that all time is happening right now, and there is no past or future on a linear scale because it all wraps around and is every moment is everywhere right now. I think that's where I'm getting caught up, especially with the conversation. I think this is just my brain at the moment. Is there so many possible ways that we could go here? And I think we started off with a really good idea with the whole biology, and I'm just like, well, if the biology is affected by time and we can actually speed up and slow down our biology, then theoretically we could slow down our body's time clock so far that we could live, you know, over 100 years or 150 years. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we speed it up, we probably wouldn't live very long at all. It's just maybe a few decades. And so I think the whole spiritual side and the whole biological side, the science mixing in with the spirituality, and then, of course, the whole quantum idea, the whole M theory, mm-hmm. where we're going just from that. I think I'm going to ask you probably a question that I asked you earlier. With time, I'll get this question out.
Well played, Donald.
Does time affect our biology, for one? And two, you said time was a little bit malleable. So can we use that malleability, like if we're running late for work, can we stretch time out to give us like an extra minute or two? And I think that would be a good place to start, because I think this is just one of those topics that has so many different ways it can go.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true. That's a really good question. I don't really know what a really good way to answer it is, because even the answer has so many levels to it. One of the longest lived animals that we know of on this planet is the tortoise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The tortoise is a slow animal. Yet the tortoise, you know, can live like a couple centuries or something like
that.
Oh,
yeah.
So, you know, I've asked myself, is there a relation to that? Is there a really relation? Is there some kind of relation to that? But then again, I look at, talking about the Chihuahua, I look at the Chihuahua versus the Bernese Mountain Dog.
Uh-huh.
In the Chihuahua, they tend to be higher energy dogs than a Bernese Mountain Dog, and they tend to outlive them.
Hmm.
Now, Bernese, you know, by almost, you know, half as much.
So it almost sounds like every biological being, entity, you know, I guess we could expand it into every living thing, almost has like their own frequency, like their own cycles per minute of time. Mm-hmm. And whatever individual cycle per minute or frequency that that individual or that species has to stay within a certain buffer. And that would go with like dog years compared to human years. Everyone says, well, he's 6 years old. He's about an 80-year-old man in human years. You know, that's one perception of time too. It's like we're mathematically figuring out that the average lifespan of canines is much shorter than humans. So therefore we figure out, well, if he's so many years compared to a human, he'd be this old.
Right.
And we can even use that out until, you know, further, like for plants, like let's say trees, redwood trees, centuries after centuries for their life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
If every biological being or entity has like their internal frequency for time, and they're able to move this time forward and backwards a little bit, then that would totally give credit to what you're saying, where time is actually malleable to a degree within the species that you find yourself.
Right. Okay. I know what you're saying now. Yeah. What you want to explore is basically how malleable is time?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
let's go there.
Okay. That's a really good question, because we can only talk about the biology of our species, because that's the only point of reference we really truly have.
Mm-hmm.
Starting off the conversation, we talked about the malleability based on your personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the paradox of this whole conversation to me.
Okay.
To talk about time, you have to remove yourself from time.
Oh.
I don't want to sound like a guy who just, you know, just ate a bunch of mushrooms here.
Came off the mountain.
Or came off the mountain, exactly. I don't want to sound like that guy. Dude, there's no time. But I'm late for my bus, so I got to go.
We are all one, man. Like, totally.
We're all one. We're just 1 minute. But no, unfortunately, it sounds like that kind of thing when I say that you have to kind of not look at time to look at time. We've talked about this in previous episodes, that mm-hmm. we've talked about the idea that everything's happening simultaneously. We've talked about the past and the present and the future kind of being this continuous thing, and we've also talked about, you know, the realities kind of composing one reality.
Mm-hmm.
For my life, it seems like I've never been able to escape the moment of now.
Oh.
As far as biologically, I can't escape this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are dying to do that, and I think those are your addicts and things like that. That they're just like, the moment sucks, I want out. That's to me the most captivating thing that I've noticed throughout my entire life. If I say now, I say now at that very moment, but it just escapes me just as quick as I said it. You know what I mean? I can never get out of this moment of now, but it seems like each moment is constantly escaping me. It's a paradox.
Yeah. The moment you realize you're in the moment, you're out of the moment.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's one of two things is happening. Either time really is, it's not really moving the way I think it is. It just seems like it's moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, all the determinists will say, no, you are locked into your biology. Yes, there's a past. You can prove it. It's concrete. You know, the future, it's going to happen, you know. But your perception of it, that's what's crazy. It's like it's ever elusive, but yet you never escape it. Right. It's almost like a permanent moment that just goes on eternally. And at the same time, it's a moment that never seems to ever completely fulfill. It's this constant unfolding. So one of two things is happening. It's either you're stuck in an eternal moment that's constantly changing, or it's just a super complete rapid set of on-offs. It's one of the two. I mean, the quantum mechanics kind of do allude to the idea of time being comprised of a bunch of some atomic particles blinking in and out of our reality or our perception.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I'm concerned, I can't seem to perceive outside the now. Now, no pun intended when I say that. When you reflect on the past, you know, some people say, I got so lost in reverie that I was back there in that moment.
Oh, yeah.
Were you there in that moment? Empirically, they say, no, you can't affect that moment. But can you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people who believe a different history than what really happened. And if everybody in the world believed a different history than what really happened, how can you really dispute it? That's what I meant by time. It's perception that really dictates the nature of time. More than an atomic clock and more than the moon spinning around the world. I mean, that's all well and good that, yeah, you know, there's 365.25 days in a year and the sun moves at this particular rate. But what difference does that make when your perception of time is what really determines your experiences?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think going on for that, you know, realizing that our mechanical time, our clocks, as it were, is a human invention. And I don't believe that wild animals have that built-in perception of time like we do with a clock system. Like, I can't really see, let's say, a hawk. You know, he gets back to his nest and is like, oh, man, this was a rough day. Yeah. It took me
five... Puts down his suitcase, hangs up his little hawk hat.
Yeah, it took me 5 hours to find anything to eat. And, man, normally I can find something within two. It's like, oh, my goodness. No, I mean, from my understanding, you know, and from my perception, a hawk or any other animal goes out and it's like, I'm hungry. I'm going to get food. Finds food and like, I'm not hungry anymore. I found food.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to procreate. Go find another hawk.
They live in the moment. That's the beauty of the animals, is they live in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we have forgotten how to do that.
Well, if we lived in the moment, though, wouldn't that cause some difficulties with increasing our technology or something like that? This is one thing I've always wondered about, and I think you are a perfect person to ask this question. If we are always living in the moment, does that mean that we have difficulty keeping records and increasing our overall knowledge? Or is living in the moment something that we're able to do but still have the life and the knowledge and the constant increase in knowledge and stuff that we have right now?
Let me see if I understand what you're saying. You're saying, can we really live in the moment and be able to, say, technologically progress? That's one example of increased knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
If we truly lived in the moment, would we no longer be would that have eluded us? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, because let's take a young child, like 2 or 3 years old. We have a perception of time that we're imprinting on them. You know, when they're hungry, they will tell you they're hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, and when they want to play, they'll go out and it's just like, oh, this is what I'm doing now. I would have to say that most children up to 2 years or so are very present with in the moment, like we all are on a regular basis, very hedonistic. And it's like, oh, look, there's a shiny thing. I'm going to go find the shiny thing. I picked up the shiny thing. I'm looking at the shiny thing. The shiny thing is very shiny. I find the shiny thing very captivating. I'm loving the shiny thing. Okay, shiny thing is starting not to shine so much anymore, and I'm getting bored. Okay, I'm putting the what used to be a shiny thing down, and oh, look, there's another shiny thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, we get older, we get like, oh, there's a shiny thing. Yeah, I used to like those when I was younger. Moving on.
Right.
If we could not live anywhere but in the moment, would we be able to sit down and write out our thoughts? Or would our thoughts be in the moment so it wouldn't matter because we are only able to perceive what is with us right at this second?
I completely understand what you're saying. In fact, the anthropologists would tell you that it is the perception of possibilities in the future and a recognition of past events from which we can learn that separates us from every single other animal in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the anthropologist and the, I guess, human biologist, is that what an anthropologist is?
Yeah.
I don't really know what you call a human biologist. A doctor?
There you go.
But that's what they say. That's what they would tell you, is that is what truly separates us. I think we're still missing it. Yes, I agree that I would say yes, that our advancements and our ability to see inside and outside the confines of the moment, to be able to project possible outcomes in the future and to learn from the past, which, I don't know, our species seems to have trouble with sometimes, but don't tell anybody.
Yeah. The, but, let's just throw that on the rug, sweep it on the rug. Oh, look, hi, Mr. President.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's some things we miss, and I think that there can be a marrying of all three of those things. I think we can kind of take perceptions of the past, take the possibilities of the future, and then kind of find our place in the present of it, in the present, if you will. And, you know, here's where I'm going to really push the envelope.
Okay.
Is it possible that maybe we're kind of quasi-fourth-dimensional perceptive creatures?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, they say that space-time is what comprises the fourth dimension, with the emphasis on the time part.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we have the ability to perceive that where many other animals don't.
Hmm. Interesting. So if we're able to see time on more of a quantum level than all other creatures on the planet, we would possibly be able to see really far enough into our, you know, future or past or whatever to see the cycles of existence, of creation, of, you know, the ebbs and flows of energy and life and death and everything coming together. Now, if that happens, it sounds like that would kind of give us a much broader, much more universal perspective, as opposed to going by the clock and saying, oh, hey, well, it's been 5 hours and I'm hungry again. I think I should eat.
Yeah, exactly. I think it gives us more reach, and it may even give us more power to be able to manipulate our present by manipulating our past and our future, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so you're saying basically if we had, let's say, a traumatic event early in our life, then by perceiving the time a little different of maybe how old we are and our cultural understanding of how mature we're supposed to be at different ages. Let me give an example. Let's say we have a traumatic event when we're 8 years old.
Okay.
8 years old in American culture, you're still very young. There's a lot of stuff you don't know and you don't understand. Now, let's say the same person that had that traumatic event at 8 years old is now 32.
Okay.
That's 16 years difference from when they had the traumatic event. They could possibly, as they have remembered this through their life, started making little minute tweaks to it, so that it's not as traumatic, so that their psychology can overcome the whole traumatic event. And therefore, it might feel like, oh, I know that that happened when I was 8 years old, but it feels like, from my perception, that it was eons and eons ago. Like, it's not even me, because, you know, like what you're saying, switching into possibly a fourth dimension view, whatever energy, fourth dimensional energy or any kind of energy that was around there encapsulated in that moment of time has been dispersed and spread out. So therefore the event that capsule of time held also started to disperse, and the 32-year-old version that had the event is not experiencing it. And by the time they're 64 or 65 or something like that, that event may not even exist, and because they would not have be able to remember it or perceive it. Nobody else that was around at that time is able to remind them of it, and so memory would be completely gone. Does that mean it never happened or doesn't exist anymore?
You know, I wouldn't say that it doesn't happen or doesn't exist. It's more the relevancy of it.
Okay.
This is where time gets really crazy, and this is where I'm so completely on the opposite of the determinists. If we go back a little further and we talk about how much time speeds up or slows down and how malleable it is,
mm-hmm.
Let's think about this. When you take an intense traumatic event, it takes, for many people, it takes years and years and years to really learn how to deal with it, if they ever do. Some never do.
Mm-hmm.
Because that intensity, there's so much emotional intensity around it, it gives it that much more power and weight. Mm-hmm. It almost creates the emotion, which emotion, energy and motion,
mm-hmm.
the derivation of the word, the emotion behind that event is a gravity well, and it pulls your attention in the present back to that moment in time, giving it more energy in the past.
Oh.
Or making the past event more energetic in the present, one of the two.
Kind of like an emotional wormhole between two points in one person's life.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like an emotional wormhole. You've basically collapsed the distance. To nothing. Now let's say this: an event in the past. If basically I wrote down a play by play of all the events that happened in that moment, and you took me out of the equation, and then whatever anybody else that was involved in the traumatic event out of the equation, and you did it like a court reporter. Can you read that back to the court? And they read it back. It's just a stack of facts, right?
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
And they have no bearing until you put the emotion with it. The emotion all of a sudden gives it relevance. And the emotion is what you base all your decisions on from there on. Here's an example of change in the past.
Okay.
Where you start to put your emotions. Do you place your emotion on the traumatic event? Do you place your emotions on what that meant? I'll use an example as far as how we kind of live in the past versus the present and why there's really almost no line.
Okay.
You went to the movies, say, 3 months ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
The difference with the point of now is that, you know, when you're there in the movies, you go, you buy your ticket, you sit next to this guy who's for some reason sweating a lot. You're really into the movie. All of a sudden, the reel stopped for, you know, a moment, and then it picked back up. The movie ended. You went, you got out of your car. You were wearing yellow pants, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you relive that moment in your mind, you think about how good the movie was. You think about the fact that the reel stopped. You think of those kind of highlights, those bullet points, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you go back there, you're thinking of the things that you were really emotionally tied to. And that's what really affects how you behave in the present. You don't think about the fact that you're wearing yellow pants because it didn't really make any impact on you emotionally. So the decisions you make today aren't going to have anything to do with the yellow pants.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of window dressing, as it were. Instead, what if the guy that you went to the movie with was not focused on he was focused on the guy sweating all the time. That's his event. So yeah, the same thing happened in history for both of you, but your perspectives were completely different based on what your emotion tied to in that past event.
And that goes totally with what you're saying earlier about perception. It sounds like what you're saying, we're only able to experience time through our emotions, because every moment in our life, being emotional beings, influences our emotions in one way or another. Would that be correct?
I think to a degree. I mean, yeah, we have experiences that don't necessarily have an emotional tie for us.
Mm-hmm.
But how much relevance do they really have?
This conversation is having a whole thing with perception and time, and I think it's really awesome to define more what perception is in this way that we're doing, because I think most people just take the idea of perception on its face value of, oh, it's what you perceive. I'm like, okay, well, what do you perceive? Well, I perceive the world around me. Okay, good. And what else? I perceive me moving through time in the world around me. Okay, well, what kind of experiences are you having as you're moving through time and experiencing the world around you? Well, I'm having this experience. Well, are you perceiving it as good or bad, or what is the relevance to it? So if we bring it back just a little bit to more of what is specifically the nature of time and how we can work with time in different ways, and is it possible to separate the emotional content and the perceptional content from time? Yeah, is that possible?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. Is it possible to separate the emotional content from the actual nature of time itself?
Yeah.
How intertwined are they, or are they even?
Yeah, because from what it sounds like is time only exists for us because we perceive the movement of it from one point to a next, and the point that we just passed is the past, and the point that we're moving to is the future, and the point that we're in now is the present. So if we had no perception, would we have time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, here's an interesting thought. What if you didn't have the physical... We've talked about this before, but what if you didn't have the physical body? Would you perceive the past, present, and future? Would you be able to perceive it simultaneously?
And what would that do to trying to figure it out with your biological mind?
Yeah, exactly. And my theory, we're thrown into the biology of it so that we can be forced to kind of looking at it from moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think the lessons are designed to come that way.
I remember being told when I was very young that one thing the human brain cannot comprehend is eternity. Mm. The human brain cannot comprehend something not having a beginning and not having an ending. And I spent years and years and years saying, oh yeah, well, I'll be the first human being to comprehend eternity, you know?
<'Cause>, How are you doing so far?
Well, I'm still working on it, you know?
But you know what? You can, Donald.
Oh yeah?
Tell me about before you were alive.
I don't remember.
You don't remember. Tell me about your afterlife. I mean... You know, I thought about this just a few weeks ago. I'm like, I can't seem to remember before I was alive.
Uh-huh.
So basically, as far as I'm concerned, from my perception, I've been here forever. You know, it's funny because we don't remember things in chronological order.
Oh, yeah.
We remember things by emotional weight.
That is a really good point.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I feel all fuzzy now.
I like that. So we remember things by their emotional weight more so than our perception of the passage of time. I like that a lot.
The contents of this memory is based on weight, not by volume. Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I found that really captivating what you said.
No, let's talk about that. This is something I just kind of was chewing on. In fact, it was just earlier today. I was thinking, well, time doesn't really have an order of events.
Mm-hmm.
So is your earliest memory really truly your earliest memory? It's just as far as if you took a measuring stick and said, yeah, I was this age when I remember it. You know, if you took all your memories and placed it in order, you're basically using the yardstick of time.
Yeah.
If you take the yardstick at a time out, like the traumatic event when you're 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
how much weight does that thing have? How often is that coming back into the brain until you've learned to deal with it and kind of alter the past, as it were?
Mm-hmm.
Or your perception of it.
Oh, but there's another piece to this that we're forgetting.
What's that?
If time is connected to emotional weight, which leads to our perception of time, then we have to expand it from just our personal ability to remember emotional events or passage of time for ourselves, because we're connected to other people. You know, when I was born, that created an emotional event for my parents. Mm. And since we're connected, then they would bestow that energy intensity to me in some way, shape, or form. And then, of course, you know, whenever you have a newborn baby, you got to show it off to the friends and family and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So everyone would have an emotional event for the beginning of life, even though it's not specifically ours, it's still in the collective unconscious. Whereas what we've been talking about up to this point is having our own specific individual emotional intensity of, you know, what we specifically can remember and have emotional weight to from our past memories.
Mm.
I still firmly believe that, like most people, that we are very connected on not just a social level, but also a very energetic quantum atomic level.
Mm-hmm. The collective consciousness?
Even more so. Okay, you imagine everybody projects their own energy field, their own aura, or their own frequency, like a radio station. Then when you come in contact with other people, that energy mixes with theirs mm-hmm. on a very energetic quantum atomic level. And therefore, I believe all of our cells have a memory of not just our personal life and our emotional experiences and memories, but also from, you know, our whole species, like going back to what we learned from the theory of evolution from when we were cavemen, like, oh, we're dinner, we got to run away from the big cats. Mm-hmm. And if we look at that, where we're constantly coming into fields of emotional weight and memories of other people, and then anytime someone else perceives us, that creates an emotional time sink or an emotional point in time where we exist.
Remember when you were talking about that kind of synchronization of time, kind of an agreed upon time you were talking about?
Okay.
Do you recall that earlier in the conversation?
Oh, this conversation or the one before or the...
Well, probably
before we started recording.
I know. I'm sure it's been.
I'm playing with it.
This conversation gets around.
It's dance card has been punched many, many times.
Yeah. Time, would you like to dance? It was something you were talking about. I think it was the beginning of this actual conversation.
Okay.
Where we were. You were talking about just kind of an agreed upon world time.
Oh, with the clocks.
Is this kind of what you're talking about? Because you did say time was kind of a construct of our species for all intents and purposes.
No, I'm taking it out of anything that humans could construct and looking at it more as it's just the way it is. In other words, this interplay of information and emotion and ideas and auras in my belief system, that just is, just like gravity is. You can't go away and say like, well, hey, I don't think I like gravity today, so I'm not going to believe in it, and therefore it has no power for me. Or I'm going to create gravity today. I'm going to make gravity be heavier today. Whereas with the mechanical clock, we humans created that. You know, we said, okay, the sun comes up and goes down. We're going to look at that frame of time from when the sun came up to when the sun came up again. And we're going to say that that's one huge section of time. And then we're going to break that up into smaller and smaller and smaller pieces. And we got from the morning, afternoon, and evening, and then nighttime. And then we broke it down even more. It's like, okay, we'll have our hours. And then we broke it down even more. And it's like minutes and seconds and then milliseconds. And if you go with the atomic clock that basically sets the time for everybody, that's down to literally atomic seconds, where there the deviation in time for keeping accurate time is so minute that's why everybody sets their clocks to the main atomic clock. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, a wind-up clock, well, it's wind-up, and if you've ever owned a wind-up clock, you know that you constantly have to wind it up to reset it.
Yeah.
If you look at time from a mechanical perspective, where, let's say you put on your watch in the morning, and it's a wind-up watch, its ability to accurately tell time affects your ability to accurately experience time. So you wind it up, it's going good in the morning. It gets to mid-morning, you're still going good. It gets to the beginning of afternoon, it's just barely starting to slow down. At this point, your perception of time and your ability to experience it would be starting to slow down. And I think this goes back to a little bit of the idea that I presented earlier, where the mechanical time would start affecting your physical time, which would affect your physical body, which would affect your physical frequency. You know, how many people do you know, especially in America, would really like to have an afternoon nap every so often, if not on a regular basis? Mm-hmm. Whereas not even existing unless we're able to first be experienced by somebody else, such as mm-hmm. with birth. In other words, once somebody originally experiences us, then we can be an individual and have consciousness and go on from there. But until that initial, this is a human being, this is a entity, this is a consciousness, then do we really exist? And therefore, are we able to experience time in any way, shape, or form before someone else who is already experiencing time experiences it with us?
That's a really interesting point you bring up. In fact, I just watched a video recently that kind of talks a lot about what you're talking about now, which is just how our experience of time might affect our frequency.
Oh.
It's called The Secret Powers of Time, and I'll post it in the show notes. There's a video on YouTube, really well done. There's a professor talking about how different societies are affected by time based on their lifestyle, how much perception of the future you have based on how you live or how much you don't. It's really, really fascinating. And he used the example of Northern Italy versus Southern Italy. That
I think I saw this video recently.
Did you see that? Where it's drawn on the whiteboard?
Oh, yeah. And it goes left and right and then up and down. And yeah. Awesome video. That is definitely really awesome.
Does that illustrate what you're talking about? That video? Was that kind of the same idea?
Not for what I'm talking about right here.
Okay.
I think that video puts things together very succinctly for what I was talking about probably, you know, a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. But what I'm talking about right here is a combination of when do we come into existence, and we have to come into existence to experience any kind of emotion or time. And if we aren't able to experience emotion, then we aren't able to experience time. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of going from that stepladder right there to, well, what would be a case where we were never experienced? And that would be an energetic spiritual being without a physical body immediately having a physical body without anyone there to witness it. Since we're not used to life happening in that way, would we be able to perceive that person? Would that person experience time, or would they cease to exist the moment they came into existence? Because, you know, it's kind of like the whole idea of, if you don't see a tree, does a tree really exist?
Right.
Because what we talked about earlier was the how closely our emotions are tied to our perception of time. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that we have to have some genesis. We have to have some point in time where we experience an emotional intensity. And I believe for most people, that is our birth. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's kind of like setting us in motion, because we're all of a sudden able to experience through our parents an intense emotional experience just by being in the same, you know, general area through atoms and auras and chakras of ourselves and our parents and the doctors that are around us. All of a sudden, the moment we're born, we start experiencing time in this way. And this goes back to what you were saying earlier, whereas if we didn't have a physical body, mm-hmm. we could experience all of time in one moment and therefore stay in one moment forever. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. And to be honest with you, I'm working to kind of grasp it, because I'm thinking about what you're talking about with the birth. And it sounds to me like you're talking about a genesis of a contact of emotions and this explosion of life.
Mm-hmm.
What I understand you saying is that's what starts the clock.
Well, that's from what we said earlier in the conversation, where came to at least some, maybe not a hard, fast rule or conclusion, but at least some idea of a conclusion that to experience time, we had to have emotional content, and the emotional weight had more strength than, you know, looking at a calendar and watching a clock. On the third day of May, you know, 1982, I was doing what? I don't know. I don't remember. Okay, on November 16th, 1987, what was I doing? Oh, that was my birthday. And I remember I wanted to bring in my birthday listening to Weird Al Yankovic's new album. So, and that had more emotional content, like what you were saying. So therefore, that my perception of time only be able to be perceived from the emotional content. And it's like, well, if we're not able to perceive anything, then we don't have an emotional content, then we're not able to experience time. When would we start experiencing time from our emotional content, from our perceptions. And I was like, well, would it be teething, like feeling pain? It's like, no, when we were a baby, no, it had to go back further. It's like, and then the whole idea of the whole energy connection between everybody and everything, that was like, oh, emotional information and content could be spread through a connection by being in the same room with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's where I'm coming up with this whole idea and this whole concept is from the whole basis that to perceive time, we have to have an emotional event. And that emotional event has to have strength enough to stay in our minds to create the quote-unquote emotional wormhole that we have.
Right.
But to experience an emotional event, we have to have some sort of perception to begin with. Mm-hmm. And where do we get that perception? Where's the genesis? Where's the beginning of that perception?
I see. Do you think it generates from self-awareness when that starts to come into play?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Once we start becoming self-aware, then we would have an idea, we would have perception, and therefore we could have emotional content. From that, we would be able to experience time from our perception. But I was looking at just from when would be our first experience of a strong emotional content that would start us off on our perception of time. And the furthest back I could go to is the emotional content of being born. Okay. And not from our individual perception, from our emotions of that time. We have a soul and a consciousness and a spirit and everything when we're born. But at that point, we're still in shock of, you know, physical body and everything, that the emotional content would come from our parents and the doctors and like, okay, baby. Okay, pretty baby. Okay, push. Okay.
The recognition of the new life.
Exactly.
And that it's almost imprinted on us, projected onto us from the moment of our birth.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying.
It's our initial emotional content or our initial emotions are projected onto us from our parents, from the event of our birth, which then starts our perception of time for our whole life.
Okay.
It gets very complex right there. Next time I'm going to do a flow chart. Next time I'm going to bring a flow chart.
Yeah.
And I'll do a PowerPoint presentation too.
Are you talking about like those big flip charts with the Sharpies or the dry erase markers and stuff like that?
Oh, well, if you want to go old school, but yeah.
That's old school, baby. We're talking about time. You can go back to the 60s if you want.
Okay, cave paintings. I will do a cave painting of exactly what I'm saying.
That's why you're talking about being afraid of big cats. Now I've put it all together.
Well, yeah, because, you know, that would still be in our DNA memory. You know, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think that goes back to what you were saying with the whole perception or not being able to have a perception of time without an emotional content.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that so exclusively, but I will say that the validity of your perception of time is directly tied to the emotional content.
You were talking about validity. I was talking about mechanics. That's where we got a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know, I see, but to be honest with you, for me personally, it's a gray area. I like to play with words and semantics, and I'll talk about if something matters to you, right? Think about what you're saying. Does that matter? What's implied is, does this become matter? Mm-hmm. Does this materialize? You're very familiar with the idea of law of attraction.
Oh, yeah.
And all this stuff we're talking about, you know, has its roots in the idea of law of attraction, or vice versa. Law of attraction has its idea in these roots. Mm-hmm. So if you say, well, you know what, does that matter to you? Does it become substantial? Does it become substance? Does it become physical? Does it materialize? If it doesn't matter, it doesn't materialize. It doesn't become substance. It doesn't become physical. So to answer your question, is it a question of perception and effect, or is it a question of actual physical mechanics? I don't think there's a separation.
I think I might have to disagree with you on this a little bit, David.
Oh, good.
Because if I'm understanding what you just said, is our experience of time based on whether we believe it's relevant or not? And I would have to disagree with that, because what it sounds like to me is you're saying, well, if I don't find this moment in time relevant, then I'm not going to perceive it very well. And that, I don't think that's what you're saying.
Oh, okay. Well, here's the best way I can break this down.
Cool.
Yeah, I could see why you have issue with that. I can completely see why you have issue with it, because it doesn't jive with history, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this happened. If it doesn't matter to me, you can't say it didn't happen. In the decisions you make, you don't make decisions based on things that don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And life is all about experiencing the events that unfold as we live it.
Uh-huh.
As these events unfold, if an event unfolds and it doesn't matter to me, I'm not going to make a decision based on it.
But does that mean it didn't happen?
Well, here's the question. Does it matter if it happened or not? Some would say, yes, it does, because if it matters to somebody else, well, then, yeah, it matters. If it matters to somebody, it matters.
Mm-hmm.
If an event happens in this world, if a tree falls in the forest.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not if no one was around to hear it. It's not a matter of does it make a sound. It's a matter of no one's around to hear it. Does anybody even care if the tree fell?
Mm-hmm.
If they never go into that forest ever? You know, does it? I mean, there's a fish that died in the ocean somewhere. Nobody really cares about that one fish. Maybe a whole school of fish as it starts to tumble and affect the entire ecology. Yes, but there are things painting myself in a corner here.
That's what I was saying. And I think any discussion of time through the time of discussing time, anyone will be able to paint themselves in a corner. I think I was painting myself in a corner earlier for a little bit. You were so nice enough to, you know, give me a way out. I'm like, I will take that doorway. So I think I understand what you're saying, where stuff happens, but if nobody cares, then it doesn't have any relevance. And so does it really happen?
Well, and the thing is unfortunately, because we're physical beings, it can't not have any relevance, because every single action in this world has an effect of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
If that one fish died in the ocean, a crab ate it, and that crab walked around the ocean floor, and then maybe somebody caught the crab, and that person ate it. It was the best crab of their life. They're remembering it. They'll order crab from here on out. You know, they end up at a party serving crab and then they didn't know that somebody has shellfish allergy, and they happen to go to the hospital, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, crab.
Oh, crab. So, yeah, that's where I found I painted myself in a corner, is that I realized that the crab was anaphylactic.
Yeah, because the whole idea that I was thinking there for a little while was gravity happens, and I find that relevant. But even if nobody in the whole wide world considered gravity relevant, it still existed.
Right.
And that's why I was going like, okay, I don't know if I agree with what you're saying, David, or maybe I'm just not understanding what you were saying.
Well, you know, here's really kind of what I'm talking about here. It's more, what I'm talking about is how much control we really have over time.
Oh, I see.
That's
what time travel. You're talking about time travel.
I'm talking about, let's call it virtual time travel, where it's not actually you going back in the past as it is you manipulating your past from the present.
And you're talking about doing that totally through our perception and our emotions?
I'm talking about that has a huge weight on how our life turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, like, for example, the traumatic event.
Okay.
What people do is when they're in counseling, when they're healing through a traumatic event, what they're taught to do is put it in the past and not give the traumatic event any power or relevance in the current moment.
Uh-huh.
That's what the technique is to extract the past. And it's extremely difficult for a lot of people to do, because there's so much emotional weight tied to it that you find yourself pulled through the wormhole that we said back to the past.
Oh, yeah.
It just stays with you. But really, that's the only way it's really affecting your present, by you going back there all the time and dwelling on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, someone could say, well, you don't understand until you've been there. Yeah, you're right. I don't understand until I've been there. But I've been in situations that can easily keep me pulled back. And I had to make a choice of how I perceived that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to basically say, that was a horrible moment in the past. It was a horrible thing I lived through. However, the thankful thing is I'm no longer living through it if I don't give it any attention.
Yeah.
If I don't dwell on it, if I don't think about it, if I think about the tiniest, really, really benign example is up here, it's been raining nonstop for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Uh-huh.
And on Tuesday, we got a reprieve. It was a gorgeous day. And then somebody said, yeah, it's going to rain on Thursday. You know, and I'm like, I don't really care about Thursday, because if I think about Thursday, it's going to ruin this beautiful sunny day.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's the same kind of idea. It's where you're putting your perception. You're actually, it's almost like you're changing the past. It's like I use the movie theater analogy.
Oh, yeah.
It's like when you're in the present, you're experiencing all the things that are happening to you at that moment.
Uh-huh.
But when you reflect on the past from the present, you're picking and choosing those moments that you're reflecting on. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And then you bring in what you were talking about with the whole relevance thing.
Right.
So if we had to sum up that whole concept of what you're talking about right there, what would be a really Cliff's Notes version on how to sum up time with what you're just talking about?
I would say that the present is the ultimate point of power.
Oh.
Fears are crazy, and I'd love to do a podcast episode on fear in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
But fears are crazy because we sit there and we think about the worst case scenario. Most often, the worst case scenario doesn't come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, we react in our present scenario based on a worst case scenario, which is one scenario out of countless, of infinite scenarios. But yet, the decision we make in the very present is based on a possible scenario that's not even guaranteed to come to pass.
And is that part of our programming, or would that be part of our basic primitive mind? I'm looking from where is that coming from? And the relevance of that would be that it does affect our choices, which affects what the experiences we have, which affects our perception of time.
I think I can help you with this.
Okay.
Because it just came to me. It's the idea of living as a physical being versus a spiritual being.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, to say don't live as a physical being means there's really, what's the point of us even being here in the first place if you're going to say that? You know, there's a Buddhist idea that if you let go of all, you know, worldly possessions, I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. I'm in flesh and blood. I'm going to eat a burger.
Yeah.
You know, my thought more on that is that if you find a good blend between the physical and the spiritual, living physically and versus living as a spiritual being,
uh-huh.
You can find that. You can find that beauty in the moment. And really see the moment and the beauty in the moment unfolding, and that constant unfolding that it does. You know, I'm not saying you can't think of the past or the future.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous to try to even do that. It's not a really good way to live. It's not smart. But to take yourself so far out of the present that you're living in one of those two places,
mm-hmm.
when you give your power to the past or the future, it renders you powerless in the present.
That actually brings up an interesting question. If you're able to consistently live in the present and your emotions are in line with your thoughts and you are completely and wholly as a person living at the moment, from moment to moment, doing what you do and, you know, living your life, then are you really perceiving time because you're just experiencing life? And can you experience life through a perception, through the lens of time? Or if you're living just in the moment and all you're experiencing is life, does time suddenly disappear like, you know, every other creature on the earth that does not have this ability to perceive past and future and a difference where everything is just at the moment? does time for you then disappear?
I would venture to say that it gets broader. I don't think it disappears. I think you have a greater perception of the nature of time.
But what happens if you're able to live this way for, you know, let's say 5 years straight, you're able to live completely in the moment. And then all of a sudden, the moment you start remembering that first moment that you started living in the moment, you're out of the moment. And so therefore, you're thinking back to the past, and time, therefore, perception of time comes back in.
Therein lies the paradox. And you know what it makes me think of, Donald?
What?
It makes me think of when you talked about enlightenment a few episodes ago.
Oh, yes.
Enlightenment is not a state of, I'm there, da-da-da. It's like, you know, the Game of Life where you kind of get to that, whatever it is at the end.
Retirement?
Yeah, retirement, and there's the mansion or whatever it is. I don't know how if you've ever done yoga, but in yoga,
yes,
there's... Are you familiar with the tree pose?
I don't know the poses by the name except downward dog, because that's one everyone knows.
Yeah, downward dog. Well, actually, in any pose, I think of the tree pose most, but in any yoga pose, there's the idea of balancing. The yoga teachers will tell you that balancing is not finding that point and constantly staying there. Balancing is the act of always adjusting. It's a constant adjustment.
Oh.
Balancing is not a stillness. It's a perpetual correcting.
Kind of like when you're driving down the road and you're constantly correcting the steering wheel in minute motions to stay in your lane.
Exactly. Ah. Exactly. As I mentioned at the beginning, if always being in the moment is elusive, if you never really can grab it, you feel like you're always in it, but you also feel like you can never grab it.
Uh-huh.
That's what being in the moment would entail. You could never fully being in the moment. You would always be in a place of just kind of grabbing that moment.
Oh,
it's like that balancing. Yeah, it's you're in and out of it constantly, but it's just a matter of taking the swings and going from this past to this future and just reducing it down to where it's just a tiny rocking. That's, I think, the best we can hope for while we're in the human form.
Oh, wow. And I think with that, we have run out of time.
That was quite apropos, wasn't it?
Well, you know, I set that up. I've been waiting the whole I'm waiting the whole episode to say, oh, David, darn, we're out of time. And actually, I lost track of time while we were talking because the conversation was so good. It's going to be a little bit longer of a podcast. So I will let my good partner, David, take us out.
All right. Well, this is David.
And this is Donald.
And we want to thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you soon in good time.
Actually, before we go again, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to all our listeners. We love doing this project. We started doing it for ourselves, but your interest has just made it all that much more worthwhile. And so I would just like to thank everyone who has been listening. And if this is your first time listening, hopefully you'll become a regular listener. And with that, I'll say good night.
Good night. Thank you.